Okay, before we have our quiet time, let's all get on the same page. If you're reading from the Sparkly Book, it is page 462, the second full paragraph. In the second edition, it is page 410, paragraph 11, line 6. In the first edition, it is page 382, the second full paragraph, line 8. If you're reading from the JCIM, it is page 193, the fifth full paragraph. And if you are reading from the CIMS edition, it is page 389, paragraph 51. Okay, let's take a few moments to be quiet together. Good evening, and welcome to everyone who is joining us on the internet. I'm going to share something with you, something that occurred during the first 6 months of my communion with Paul. We arrived at a point where it was clear to me that he was conceiving of our communication as though I were reaching through the veil to talk to him as a human being in the middle of the human condition where he thought he was. And I had to share with him the good news, which was that contrary to the picture he had, it was more like him in a submarine sending up a periscope above the surface of the water, above the threshold, we'll say, of the veil, and recognizing me and communing with me where I am, meaning in a state of enlightenment, in a state of being awake, even though I, out of all of creation, was the only part he was able to recognize and communicate with. Now, this is very important, because if you imagine that when you are doing the two-step, and you are saying, Father, or Holy Spirit, what is the truth here? And you hear an answer, you are infilled with the conscious experience of truth that heals. It is not being provided to you as an orphan in the orphanage, or as a human being in the middle of the human condition. No. It means that in your intent to abandon your isolation, you have reached through the boundary where you can hear the Father, or you can hear the Holy Spirit, or you can hear me or your guide. Now, this helps explain the difference in a graphical way, in a conceptual way that expresses the truth, how it is that you are not one among many, but are the one that constitutes the many. And so that you might not misconstrue that, let me put it this way. When you do the two-step, and you abandon your isolation and your solid intent to be an independent agent in your own right, you move your attention into the experience of atonement, into the experience of being awake. And so your attention is no longer in the human condition as a human entity. This is very important. You are, at that point, functioning as the holy son or daughter of God that you truly are and always have been. When you make that connection, what happens is that you join with me, or the Holy Spirit, or the Father, or your guide, all of which function with the same intent. And with us, you can turn around and look back at the situation or circumstance that caused you to reach out for help and see it from our perspective, because that's where you're looking at it from. You see? Again, the practice of the holy instant puts you in communion with the Holy Spirit, that which is nothing more than your right mind, or me, who serves the same function as the Holy Spirit, or the Father, who is always bestowing upon you His perspective, the truth of everything. And from that place with us, you are able to turn around, abandoning or having abandoned the perspective that caused you to reach out for help in the first place. And look with us to see the truth. Now, let's hear these words again. You are not one among many, which is what the human condition seems to be. You are the one that constitutes the many. Now, you are the one that constitutes the many when you have engaged in the holy instant, when you have reached out for help, and help has been given and you are experiencing the help. And in that experience of help, you are looking back at what you had called a problem with God's perspective. Now, is not God the one that constitutes the many? Is not God that which constitutes all of creation forever, making it forever new by virtue of being the movement of creation? That is what God is. And so God's experience is the experience of that. And it is your birthright to be experiencing the same thing, because you've been given by the Father no other capacity. Your function is to experience what the Father is being. Your function is to experience the meanings, and only the meanings, that the Father is embodying in the movement of creation. So, the experience of atonement, the experience of awakening, is going to be one of a shift from the orphanage vantage point, the independent thinker vantage point, the independent receiver of truth vantage point. And you're going to move, I'm going to say for lack of better words, next to us, and turn around and look at what we're looking at, which is just exactly where you were a moment ago in your distress. But we're looking at it with the Father's perspective. So the healing of nations and the healing of individuals is a result of aligning with, willingly, cooperatively, humbly, with the Father's perspective, which is your birthright to be experiencing, and looking on everything from there. From there, you will find no call for justice. You will find no justification for jealousy or judgment or revenge. What you want is to be of sound mind, not fragmented mind. And sound mind is the experience of the divine eternal intelligence that God is being right where you are as you in your wholeness. So you see, it's never a matter of asking from the human condition, what is the truth here about the human condition, so that you, in the human condition, can address the human condition. Be with that for a moment. What will you be? You don't know. And when you go into the holy instant not thinking you know what will come of it, you are in a position to experience divine vision, divine realization, and have a new perspective, which is what is called for. Just keep the visual in mind of you moving to my side and then turning around and looking with me at the place where you just came from, looking at it with my perspective, which is the Father's perspective, which it is your birthright to be experiencing as your perspective. You see? That's how you find yourself experiencing being the one that constitutes the many. Because you are experiencing what the Father is experiencing. And in that, being co-creator, as I've said before, the cooperator with the Father. You see? That's when everything changes in the twinkling of an eye. And the twinkling of an eye in which everything can change can happen now. Or by December 21st. You see? It's time. And it's not as complicated as you would make it. Now, most of you who are listening have had the experience of revelation or divine insight, divine communion with a divine source that has changed you. And you did not realize that when you had that experience, you weren't having it from the human condition on a planet that is part of a physical universe that came from a big bang and had nothing to do with the divine source. You have had the experience of seeing from the Father's vantage point. You have had a moment of illumination in which your divinity was being directly experienced, not successfully blocked by your intent to be a successful independent agent. That is what happened. It was you having an experience of your divinity. It was you being the one that constituted the many because you were willing to look through the eyes of that one that does constitute the many. And you were not choosing to have a separate interpretation of it all yourself. Now, let's go into the book. The fierce attraction which guilt holds for fear is wholly absent from love's gentle perception. It's the difference between the orphanage perspective of you being one amongst many and the Father's perspective, the perspective of the Holy Spirit, in which you are the one that constitutes the many, inseparable from the whole. What love would look upon is meaningless to fear. You see? And quite invisible. But if you stop and think about it, when you reach out in the holy instant to ask for help, you're asking for the help to look upon the meaningless and help you do something about it. And that's not the answer, because it doesn't allow for your perspective changing so that you are seeing it from a place that knows the answer, which doesn't call for the practice of force or powerful correction, but allows your heart to melt so that love flows and love is received and there is a gentleness of your spirit that was not present when you were in the state of reaction that caused you to be uncomfortable and ask for help. Engage in the holy instant. Relationships in this world are the result of how the world is seen. And I'm going to say where it is seen from. And this depends on which emotion was called on to send its messengers to look upon it and return with word of what they saw. Fear's messengers are trained through terror, and they tremble when their master calls upon them to serve him. Now, this sounds really ugly, especially if you're the one in the middle of distress who is sending out messengers of fear to find proof that fear is called for, that fear is justified, and that force can be appropriately brought to bear upon the situation. But indeed, when it comes right down to it, and you're between a rock and a hard place, and your world seems to aggressively demand that you do something to protect yourself, you do indeed succumb to fear, and you do indeed send out messengers of fear. And that is when you find out how capable you seem to be a master of the messengers of fear, who trained them through terror, so that they tremble when you call upon them to serve you. You can be pretty ugly when you are between a rock and a hard place. If things are relatively smooth and calm in your life, these things never surface. And you say, well, I'm far from... an agent of a horror movie. I'm far from that which promotes evil. But the fact is that fear's messengers, your fear's messengers, are trained through terror, and they tremble when their master calls upon them to serve him. For fear is merciless even to its friends. Its messengers, the ones you send out for confirmation that there is justification for attack, steal guiltily away in hungry search of guilt, for they are kept cold and starving, and made very vicious by their master, who allows them to feast only upon what they return to him. Mind you, this is talking about each one of you who, while still in the orphanage, engage in this kind of a context of being. Fortunately, the correction is simple. And fortunately, you cannot actually accomplish becoming what you are not. And so there is no penalty awaiting for you. There is just the suffering that you will be relieved of when you abandon your independence and reach, quote, through the veil, unquote, to join with your guide or the Holy Spirit or the Father, humbly and with commitment. No little shred of guilt escapes their hungry eyes, the messengers you send out. And in their savage search for sin, they pounce on any living thing they see. You see, there's not any real discrimination. They pounce on anything, guilty or not. They pounce on any aspect of the kingdom of heaven and carry it, screaming to their master, you, to be devoured. This is one of the reasons it is so important to engage in the holy instant, so that you do not ignorantly or with great purpose indict and punish your fellow man or yourself or your body by sending out messengers looking for that which is awful, and then believing the confirming news that they return to you, so that you end up condemning a brother or a nation or a race or a situation. That needs the healing unction of love and not the presence of the justification of hate and fear to penalize it. Send not these savage messengers into the world to feast upon it and to prey upon reality. Hear that? And to prey upon reality, to prey upon the kingdom of heaven, that it all is, to prey upon the holy sons and daughters of God, who they are, the real actuality of the presence of God manifest. I've said it before. There's only one thing confronting you. Seen either truly or through a glass darkly. And that one thing is reality. That one thing is God's creation. That one thing is the movement of creation occurring now, 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 now. If you're seeing something different, don't believe it. Don't use what you're seeing as the basis for any action other than saying, Father, what is the truth here? And then be quiet enough to hear the Father or me or the Holy Spirit so that you might, now that you're consciously with us, turn around so that you can look at everything from where we're standing, where we're being, so that you might experience being, the one that constitutes the many, the one that is inseparable from your brothers and sisters and all of creation in its perfection, its fullness. Send not these savage messengers into the world to feast upon it and to prey upon reality, for they will bring you word of bones and skin and flesh. Now, very simply, what that means is that when you are identifying as one among many, when you are one diligent, independent agent trying to make yourself valid as an independent agent, you will find that you are identifying yourself as a body engaged in these activities, bones and skin and flesh. Not only that, bones and skin and flesh that can be injured, decay, and die. In other words, that which is mortal. That is the absurd and destructive perception of God's creation, the manifestation of the movement of God, which is incapable of sin, disease, or death, which is as eternal as the visibility and tangibility of all of the rest of creation. But they will bring you, the messengers you send out, the messengers of fear, they will bring you word of bones and skin and flesh. And of course, it'll be talking about your brothers and sisters. But it confirms to you that what's true of them is true of you, which is, of course, why you sent the messengers out in the first place. They have been taught to seek for the corruptible and to return with gorges filled with things decayed and rotted. In other words, misperceived so badly, distorted so far out of the scope of reality and of God's creation, that they present nothing godlike, nothing divine, nothing perfect, nothing lovable. To them, such things are beautiful. Why? Because they seem to allay their savage pangs of hunger. They get to bring them home to their master, and then they get to feed on them. And so they appreciate them, because for a little while, they feel full. They feel satisfied. Justice has been served. Purpose has been fulfilled. Correction has been done. But there hasn't been a bit of healing. For they are frantic with the pain of fear and would avert the punishment of him who sends them forth by offering him what they hold dear. That, no matter how well covered up, is the modus operandi of functioning as an orphan in a material world and universe where God is not seen. But, continuing, the Holy Spirit, that which you have experienced as a result of being humble and engaging in the holy instant, the Holy Spirit has given you love's messengers to send instead of those you trained through fear. They, love's messengers, are as eager to return to you what they hold dear as are the others, the messengers for fear. If you send them, love's messengers, forth, they will see only the blameless and the beautiful, the gentle and the kind. They will be as careful to let no little act of charity, no tiny expression of forgiveness, no little breath of love escape their notice, and they will return with all the happy things they found to share them lovingly with you. Be not afraid of them. They offer you salvation. Theirs are the messages of safety, for they see the world as kind. Okay. That paragraph sounds a little Pollyanna, doesn't it? Oh, sort of like the practice of positive thinking. Overlooking what needs to be looked at, right? Pretending it's not there, right? Well, that's what the orphan thinks. That's what the independent agent thinks. Because the independent agent believes that he will succeed at becoming real as a result of dealing with and overcoming all of the evil. All of the things that the messengers for fear have brought back to confirm that there is danger and that he needs or she needs to protect himself or herself. You see? If you send forth only the messengers the Holy Spirit gives you, which of course takes trust because it's not been your habit, if you send forth only the messengers the Holy Spirit gives you, wanting no messages but theirs, you will see fear no more. And the ego says, right, and you will be more vulnerable than you've ever been before because you're ignoring the facts, you're ignoring the reality that this is a world of conflict. This is a polarized world in which the positive and the negative are in constant conflict with each other, constant contest with each other, so that there is a constant state of tension and misery. And so you must face this suggestion and act contrary to it if you're going to reach out to the Holy Spirit and if you're going to benefit from the clarity of his teaching, the clarity which he will reveal to you about what is true and what is real and what is not and what you no longer need to engage in. The world will be transformed before your sight, cleansed of all guilt and softly brushed with beauty. Now, here's the key. The world contains no fear which you laid not upon it. As an orphan, you're convinced that there is a world out there which has fearful things in it, on its own, in its own right. And you're the innocent victim of it. It's not true. But you will not find that it's not true until you engage in the holy instant and follow through. And want no messages, but the ones that love's messengers bring back to you. The world contains no fear which you laid not upon it, and none you cannot ask love's messengers to remove from it and see it still. If you ask love's messengers to remove it, you will no longer be able to see it. Is that like an ostrich sticking its head in the sand? No, it's not. It's like you sticking your periscope up into the Father's perspective and seeing the truth, in which fear is not present and the results of fear are not present. The Holy Spirit has given you His messengers to send to each other, your brothers and sisters, and every part of creation, and return to each with what love sees. They have been given to replace the hungry dogs of fear you sent instead, and they go forth to signify the end of fear. Now, this may all sound very impractical, because you look out on the world and the very airwaves are full of pronouncements of threat and conspiracy and planned hatred and plots to undermine the peace of mankind. And it all seems to be very real and something that something must be done about. But I'm going to tell you something for perspective. You look out on the world and you see a world full of microbes, germs, things that transmit disease, tendencies for bodies to be flawed, and suddenly be sent into a tailspin of degeneration. You take medication to protect yourself against this virus or that germ, because not the airwaves, but the very air seems to be laden with danger. But I will tell you something. There are people all around this globe who consciously and consistently engage in healing, and they do it by not paying attention to the messengers that come back that say, oh, this body is terminally ill. This organ is actually being eaten away by this, that, or the other thing. These people engaging in healing do not govern themselves according to the messengers which come and claim that there is uncorrectable disease, uncorrectable damage. This is important. They insist upon, in their way, practicing the two-step and saying, Father, what is the truth here? Father, I know that what is presenting itself, the messengers that are coming to me, are not telling me the God's honest truth. They are lying, no matter what x-ray shows what happening, no matter how much physical evidence there is to it. I know that it is not your will. Therefore, I am not going to trust these messengers. I am not going to attempt to cope with this as an independent agent, as one among many. But I choose to join with you, Father, and listen for your voice, to have you reveal to me the truth that proves the lie to be a lie, to prove that the messengers are not legitimate or believable. And I am going to stay with my connection with you until I see the evidence. And the key is that healings occur every day of every sort, from the eradication of terminal illness to a festered sliver coming out spontaneously from a finger that it was embedded in. Being the one that constitutes the many, means that there are no messages, words, of bones and skin and flesh. Because in the holy instant is where the Father's laws prevail, where the laws of creation prevail. And so when those who practice healing every day on this globe and experience healing, experience the healings, they are demonstrating the fact that not anyone needs to believe the messengers of fear that they have sent out and that have come back and disturbed things. And without engaging in conflict, but engaging in joining with the Father or the Holy Spirit or me, and turning around and looking at the situation with us, they find nothing there. In other words, they discover what could be called spontaneous healing, even instantaneous healing. You see? You listen to the news and you don't join while you're listening. and you come to the conclusion that, man, you got to go out and get those bastards. Do something to them. Make them hurt until they stop. Keep your attention on what the messengers for fear have returned to you. The negative interpretations. Even the apparent behaviors of people, which, like an organ being consumed by cancer, seems to state is something real to be forced out of the situation, forced out of the world. No. Stop it. When you hear these things and you're inclined to believe them and get revved up about it, riled up about it, so that you send out even more messengers of fear looking for further confirmation of how dangerous things are, so that you might bring more force into play in changing. Something which, if you practice the holy instant, will become obvious to you is an illusion, no matter how real it seems to be. Again, I must return to this. Diseases are healed every day. Not by forcing a body, not by forcing a physical process to change, but by abandoning the perspective from the orphanage, joining with the Holy Spirit or the Father or me or your guide where we are, and turning around and looking at what prompted you to join us from our vantage point. Healing occurs. And it's miraculous. Because force is never involved. If you send forth only the messengers the Holy Spirit gives you, wanting no messages but theirs, you will see fear no more. You will see no cancer-consumed organ. And the x-rays will say, there is perfection here. Because there is a God. And there is creation. And the creation is as perfect as the singularity of the Father, which disallows for polarization, conflict. This is the truth. Again, it happens as a result of your coming to where we are and turning around and looking with us at the place you came from so that you might see it with our perspective, with your true perspective. Free of delusions. Then, you could say, love, too, would set a feast before you. On a table covered with a spotless cloth, set in a quiet garden, where no sound but singing and a softly joyous whispering is ever heard? Oh yeah, this is too good to be true. This is fantasy. Embrace it as the truth. Else you will stand in denial of it and distance yourself from its experience. This is a feast which honors your holy relationship and at which everyone is welcomed as an honored guest. Even the ones whom, before you practiced the holy instant, seemed to be the justification for your suffering, that it would have seemed could receive no relief without the bringing of force to bear upon the bastard or bastards. And in a holy instant, grace is said by everyone together as they join in gentleness before the table of communion. And I will join you there, as long ago I promised, and promise still. For in your new relationship am I made welcome, and where I am made welcome, there I am. Where I am welcome, there is the Holy Spirit. Where I am welcome, there is the Father. And where I am welcome, there is you. And where I am and where you are, there is no bastard. To be dealt with. The belief is that cancer, most forms of cancer, are terminal. There are beliefs that other forms of disease are terminal. But healing of them is occurring every day through the shift in one form or another from being one amongst the many to being the one that constitutes the many. Because you have let the one that constitutes the many be your mind. And you are willing to look at everything from the vantage point of that mind, which is the one that constitutes the many, meaning God. And in that act, you come into the full conscious experience of your capital S self. That's what this is all about. I love you all, and I look forward to being with you next time.